listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go, Giants! SF Giants! Let's go, Giants! SF Giants!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants, this is Torture Cast.
Everybody, and welcome to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. My name is Ben Lee, and I am here after a lovely evening of watching the Giants play again. It's about time we saw them on the screen and didn't just have to listen to the wonderful voices of John Miller and Kruk and Kipe. And yeah, we're so spoiled around here, I tell you. All right, and with me tonight is, of course, Chad King, just as unstoppable as always.
Catch the damn ball. All right, it's only spring training, I know. But I just needed that old comedy black and white speed with the follies over it. That would have been fantastic. Yeah.
With the cheesy like player piano music in the background.
Yeah, yeah. It'd be great if they had the big mustaches and the billy sticks and the big tall beanie hats or whatever. That'd be great.
Oh, that would have been perfect.
But that's okay. Anyway, we'll get to that later. Glad to be here.
Yeah, and I mean, we've definitely had a lot going on, and not just in Giants land. We've got a couple of news points today that actually have nothing to do with the Giants, which I'd say is a first for us, but I'd probably be lying. The one big one that may affect us directly, though, you definitely already kind of stated your point on it on the website, so if anybody hasn't had a chance to look, I'd post a link, but it's right there. Just look below the top story on the site. No being lazy now. But let's go ahead and talk wild cards, because let's just jump right in there and let's discuss changes, because we don't like change. Change is scary.
I'm scared of it.
Oh gosh, get her away! I just want
no. This seems to be a contentious issue for a lot of fans. Maybe a lot like the DH. So I haven't seen any polls indicating on where the main camp lies, but I firmly have my 2 feet planted in hating this expansion of the playoff system for several reasons. The main reason really comes down to the nature that it's a one-game playoff. I don't like that. I like it. It's fine if two teams are tied. Don't get me wrong. If you have to settle a division or a wild card race with a one-game playoff, I mean, that's the only equitable way to do it. And you can't lengthen the season, just ad-libbing it there at the end of the year. They have a schedule to follow. But this really does open up the door for a possibility, and it will happen, I guarantee you, because if you look at the last 17 years at the wild card, the original wild card playoff system has been in place, this would have happened at least several times where the higher wild card seed, if you will, finished significantly further ahead in terms of record than the second wild card team. The extreme being the 2001 Oakland Athletics.
I love that example when you put it up, and when you showed what the number was, I probably nearly spit out my drink.
It's pretty embarrassing, and I know that that's an extreme. It is an extreme, but it can happen. It will happen again. The Mariners obviously took Major League Baseball by storm that year and won the most games since they expanded to 162 games with 116 wins that year.
Good grief.
A's still won 102. Now, of course, unlike the Giants in 93, where they didn't have a wild card to get in with 103 wins, the A's had that back door. Well, if they had the expanded wild card playoff system back then, their opponent would have been the Minnesota Twins. They had 85 wins. They were barely above 500, a full 17 games behind the Oakland Athletics. How can you possibly say, well, the A's didn't win their division, so it's their own fault. If they lost that game to the Twins, it's their own fault. I don't buy that argument. That's what everybody seems to be relying on. It's like it puts a premium on winning your division, so it puts more pressure on the teams to win their division, and they don't feel like the wild card is cheapened too much. I just don't agree with that. Yes, the majority of the time, those two teams are going to be within 2 or 3 games from one another, and there's less of that argument there. but there were still several times there were 6, 7, 8, 10, 12, and the 17-game differential. And it's going to happen, and I'm not going to like it. That being said, as a Giants fan, if this system was in place the last 17 years, the Giants would have actually made the postseason an additional 3 times. I think it was 01, 07, and 09. Anyway, somewhere, something like that. I don't have it in front of me right now. So then you could say, yes, the Giants, who knows what would have happened if they had won just one of those 3 one-game playoffs. They could have gone to the World Series. You never know. Just like they did in 02 and 10.
I feel a little like you're almost saying that the same thing that we used to say when we first started doing the TorturCast, just get us into the playoffs and anything can happen, because that's what we saw in 2010. I do feel a little bit like you're almost arguing that in this case, that's a bad, that actually takes away from the extended playoffs, that get somebody in the playoffs and anything can happen. But in that case, anything can happen to a team that was 17 games better than another team.
Yeah.
That it has that added.
Well, to me, it cheapens the 162-game regular season. Okay. I love the expansion of the playoffs back in 94, I guess it was. Well, that was the strike year, so really the first year it came into effect was 95, because it did prevent what happened to the Giants in 93. They were one season too late, where you do win 103 games. They had more wins than the Phillies, who won the East. They had 97 wins that year, and yet they go home. That seemed pretty unfair, and that's why Major League Baseball did this, is to capture that competitive team that really deserves to be in the playoffs, and of course expand the playoffs and make more money, blah, blah, blah. I just don't agree with this. If they were to implement this system, I would have to go, I mean, they are implementing this system, but I would rather they make it a 3-game series, at least lengthen it a little bit, because all you need is the weaker team to have to just be going into the playoffs hot, or they lined up their ace pitcher, or the higher seeded team, you know, their main pitcher just got hurt, or they have one bad game and a guy makes an error. You know, that's something like that. It's baseball. Right. Everything happens. It's just one game. You can't minimize your mistakes into just one game and go, oh, well, we'll get them tomorrow. There is no tomorrow. So, I mean, I know for some fans that does bring a certain excitement. There are more teams that will be in contention as the playoffs are getting closer, and maybe more of those games will actually mean something. But it also could bring up a nightmare scenario, which is interesting. I don't know why they're trying to force it this year. They already agreed with the collective bargaining agreement that the Astros are going to move to the AL West next year in 2013. Right. And then they would expand the playoffs, because the schedule hasn't been set. So they could actually create the schedule to at least have a little bit of flexibility should they have an extra one-game playoff to get into the one-game playoff, which is kind of silly when you think about it.
I mean, that same we're looking at playing December baseball almost.
Well, that could happen this year. You can have several teams tied for that fifth playoff spot. Well, you're not going to decide that based on record, are you? No, they're going to have some sort of playoff system. So I don't know how that's going to be resolved. Additionally, they're going back to the 2-3 format for the division series this year, because it eliminates a travel day, which allows that one game playoff to kind of be squeezed in, because those schedules were already set before this was approved.
Right.
So basically they're trying to shoehorn in this game. And in order to do that, they're taking the 2-2-1 division series format and going back to the 2-3 format. So I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think there's a lot not to like about the system. I do think it's really funny though, because somebody actually quoted at me the other day, you know, they said, well, aren't you really excited? There's going to be that one game, that one winner take all kind of, and I mean, from a dramatic standpoint, yeah, that sounds good. But when you, I mean, come on, look at last season and at the games that we had at the end of last season. I was racing home to try and catch the end of the game that the Phillies were playing, because it was so exciting. That was game 162. That wasn't, you know, there were a bunch of really good games on game 162. Tampa Bay had a really good game, an incredible game, thanks to Evan Longoria.
Yeah. I mean, eight runs or whatever in the seventh inning.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. And it was that good. And yet there was no one game extra wild card playoff. I mean, the extra wild card team is going to go into game 163 and be gone. It's not really that different from the regular season. So, I mean, I don't really buy the idea of, you know, don't you want that competitive one-game playoff? It's kind of forced. It's something that we already have that works in the 162-game series. And then I realized at some point that the person I was talking to was a Red Sox fan, and I was like, oh, you're just bitter. Okay, got it.
I think from a statistical standpoint, it'll be funny because I know that game 163 is right now, just count towards regular season stats. They're not considered playoffs at all.
So somebody could essentially have like, well, he's got a sterling postseason record, 3-for-3 in the postseason ever.
Well, that's the thing, is that it's going to be wild card versus wild card. I'm assuming, and I haven't clarified this, that these are going to be postseason statistics. And that goes a step further. If you're a fan of the team that gets the fifth wild card, do you like buy a hat that says fifth wild card champion? Yeah. And then you lose.
Sure, and that they do that. And then you lose and you just... And you just hang on to it, crying softly to yourself, like, why did I spend $25 on this hat?
We made the postseason one game. Anyway, sorry.
I mean, do people, I realize that it's been a while since we've been to the playoffs and not as a division champion, but how much wild card swag have we seen? I guess I'm sure it's out there.
Oh, yeah, no, they have wild card swag every year for those teams. That's why I'm wondering, now that there's two wild cards, you're only guaranteed one game. Are you really going to have a wild card pennant or hat or shirt? I mean, it seems ridiculous to me. And then look how many teams potentially are going to celebrate. You're adding another level of celebration. So, oh, we clinched the fourth or fifth wild card. Yeah, now we go to the next game. We win that one game. Oh, we go to the division series. Then you win that one. Yay, let's pop more champagne. I mean, these guys got to get tired lifting up these bottles and shaking it all over everybody. This
is
crazy.
It's almost the question of like, how much more does the front office want to have to put into the champagne payroll?
How much plastic wrap do they have to put over the lockers?
How much embezzlement do you think you're going to see out of people just going, well, we don't know how much it's going to cost extra, so we're going to project. And when really it's like, we're buying like $3 bottles of champagne, but I'm just going to pocket $50 because we're a wild card team.
Well, I had a few more points, but I know it's getting long in the tooth. But yeah, read it on TortureCast. Who knows? Maybe the Red Sox of 2004, who were a wild card team, maybe they would never have gotten the curse off their back if this system was in place then, because they might have lost the first game. It's interesting to look at history and see what might have changed.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, and I'm never one to use that as a justification for or against something, just because I firmly believe that what has happened has happened. But it is funny to look at that kind of thing and pull the what if card. Speaking of Boston and speaking of champagne in the clubhouse, by the way, you pulled up an interesting news item here. You noted that Boston has banned alcohol in the clubhouse. Obviously, this is a huge reaction to the news that came out last year about what happened under the watch of Terry Francona, and how he essentially, as they said, lost the clubhouse. How Boston stopped respecting their manager in a lot of ways. Pitchers had beer in the clubhouse and were sort of hanging out and shooting the you-know-what. And I would have to say this seems a little bit reactionary, but I know they're not the first to do so. So do you think it's a case of Boston catching up with the rest of the league under Duras, or do you feel like the alcohol bans that we're seeing in clubhouses now are a reaction to the news in Boston? Because I don't necessarily feel like alcohol in the clubhouse in and of itself signifies an issue, but I feel like it became symptomatic of a bigger issue that players were having with Francona during the season last year.
Yeah, I do think it's clearly a knee-jerk reaction to Bobby Valentine. Of course, he says and he claims, and I guess I have to take his word for it, that most of the clubs he's ever been involved with, he himself has banned alcohol use in the clubhouse. So if that is the case, then you could, you know, maybe that's true. Maybe it's actually him banning alcohol and the Red Sox are hiding behind that as a convenient excuse. Because it probably, let's be honest, it would have happened anyway. No matter who became the manager, they were going to ban alcohol because this was such a...
It was going to be a demand. Like the fans would probably hit somebody's head if they didn't.
Which is interesting. But, you know, these are grown adults. They can make their own decisions. They're going to get beer anyway. I don't know. It just seems silly to me. I know that 19 out of the 30 teams already ban alcohol in the clubhouse because, you know, you don't go to work and they don't provide beer for you in the middle of the day. I mean, except on
most jobs don't.
Most jobs don't. And on occasion they do, you know, even your normal 9-to-5 job, unless you're tested or something for it, or you're, you know, driving a school bus, maybe. That would kind of probably be bad.
That'll get
but
it.
Yeah, like the Cardinals ban it, the Angels ban it. You know, there's a whole list there. So well, I think people are making a little bit bigger deal than it really is. But it is, you know, it's Boston. It's lager. It's beer. It's drunk Irish guys. I don't know. It's kind of funny.
I mean, I'd have to say that one of the things I noticed about this is just these things are kind of self-policing already. This is why baseball players have a kangaroo court and why Boston had a team captain, you know. Jason Varitek wasn't just around to stand tall and look pretty. I don't know that he necessarily did that anyway. But, you know, it's this idea that if you've got somebody who's seriously, like, if he's seriously getting drunk back there, then someone needs to take action. That I think that's a reason to suspend somebody, put them on the DQ list, you know, drop them into the minors, depending on what kind of stature he has, how quickly the issue can be cleaned up. But I don't know that it's necessarily something that I feel like it's symptomatic of a larger issue, and it's one that you fix through discipline. And I don't feel like the ban's going to do it. The ban, I think, if it is something that Valentine does anyway, and obviously Bobby V is, you know, his own man as a manager, and I can't say anything about that. But if it's a ban, it feels a little bit like it's being played as lip service, and that's wise. It makes for a good PR move with the fans, but at the same time, it's kind of like, well, it does seem a little bit like too little, too late. I gotta say though, you know, Bobby Valentine set himself up really well in this situation to succeed in Boston, primarily because no matter what happens, he's going to come out of it looking pretty good. If they do really well, they get back to the playoffs this year, then it's congratulations, Bobby Valentine. Everything that we said about you've been paying attention to Japan and you've been you know, analyzing for ESPN, you have no idea what managing is like anymore, out the window. Good job for him. And if he does poorly, those Red Sox players, man, they need discipline. Those players are just, they're horrible, I tell you. But that Bobby Valentine, he's such a champ.
I mean, if the Red Sox get that fifth wild card with 84 wins, what a bang up job he did, you know? I mean, jeez. Yeah, really.
Boy. Nobody's taking the fifth wild card spot with 84 wins when the AL East exists. I mean,
yeah, you're probably right about that.
I'd have to say that, you know, you've got enough teams around. The AL still, I think, has some clear favorites. I think it's safe to say that the Yankees and Tampa Bay look really good this year. Tampa Bay, I think, is looking very good this year, some of the moves they've made. Yeah. I think it's safe to say that Detroit is looking extremely good this year between Fielder and Cabrera. It's kind of disgusting, and I'm a Tigers fan, and I almost feel like I'm rooting for the Evil Empire now, but I just can't hate them. It seems like we've got some clear favorites, but I think that I don't know that this year, based on what's happened, I don't know if I consider Boston to be in that same category right now. And maybe it's just because of the collapse last year that I'm looking at it that way, but I don't know that I see them as being major contenders for the AL East right now or for the wild card.
Yeah, I think they'll definitely be in there. I do think it's a little bit of a hangover from last year. They cleaned house a little bit, and hey, they're going to be sharp. They're not going to be hungover. So, no, I'm just kidding. That had nothing to do with it.
I'm going to need a pitch with sunglasses on today, you guys.
Yeah.
Everybody be really quiet when I'm warming up.
You're just going to have the guys putting beer in Gatorade bottles now. That's all. No big deal.
You know, a Gatorade bottle is see-through, Chad.
Since those orange ones? Oh, no. I see what you're saying. I'm thinking of the sports bottles.
The squeeze bottles. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh. All right. So that's what Boston's doing. Let's get a little bit closer to home, though.
Yeah, we haven't talked about the Giants. No, what are we doing?
Well, I've got one thing that I want to talk about real quick, or rather one real quick thing that I want to talk about, and that's Gregor Blanco. He's moving really fast out there. Dude's got some wheels. We've got a lot of speed on the team this year, and I think Gregor Blanco is one of the first signs that we're seeing of that. I mean, you know, Blanco went first to third on a wild pitch the other day, first to third on a steal today, that's an errant throw that sailed too far right. I think Blanco has a huge chance of being the next Darren Ford, only bringing his bat. I think that there's any way that he cracks a starting lineup, but I think that he definitely has a chance to show more of what he showed today. A lot of speed, some good base running, a lot of attention on the base paths. He doesn't get lazy out there, and he definitely definitely forces people into making mistakes and rushing things. And that's exactly what we saw from the bullet Darren Ford last year.
Yeah.
So I'm inclined to say that Blanco has a real good chance of being the next Darren Ford. Even, you know, and we've seen other guys who are real fast this camp. Pagan, blazing speed. Cabrera, pretty decent speed. Tyler Graham today, if you got to see the last couple innings, it was a cute little land on his patoosh there at the end. But
That dude is quick.
Graham is fast. I mean, I thought Blanco was fast when he was motoring around the bases, and then I saw Graham run. And just, you heard Sergio Romo happened to be on with Kruk and Kipe at the time. And
yeah.
Graham is running for a ball in the outfield. And, I mean, he gets there and then, you know, catches a cleat and lands on his rear. But he gets there with enough time that I thought if he had managed a throw right after that, he still might have, like, it might have gotten in. And so he got to that ball so fast that he probably prevented a base or two from coming up from that thing bouncing all the way to the wall.
Did you hear Romo's nickname for him?
Oh, gosh. Spider Monkey?
Spider Monkey.
Spider Monkey. He is fast. It's ridiculous. I almost want to call him more of a roadrunner. I mean, just you saw how quickly his legs were moving out there, and that's while he was tracking a ball. This wasn't just, you know, this wasn't straight base running where he kind of puts his head down and goes because he's committing. It was, where's the ball? I have to track it and follow it. And I know that if I'm, like, looking up at a ball and it's flying in the air and I'm trying to go catch it, I'm going to sprawl my face out onto something. Like, there's no way that I can move that fast, make it to the ball, and not land on my nose.
He has what you call closing speed, by far. That was impressive. So, yeah, maybe he'll be the late September call-up and fill in some pinch running roles because he has a lot of options, I'm assuming, at this point.
Yeah, I don't think that Graham has seen any time in the big leagues yet that I'm aware of.
No, I don't think so.
No, he's still very young. That contributes a great deal to his game. I don't think we've seen him bat a whole lot, but I'm inclined to say Graham is going to be a big deal at some point, but not in the way that Brown or Sanchez or even Chris Dominguez are a big deal at the moment. I think Graham, depending on how he does this year in the minors, I think Graham is probably going to be a Darren Ford kind of big deal, where he comes up, makes an impact, acts as a spark plug in a lot of ways, but doesn't necessarily establish himself as an everyday guy.
So Brian Stowe, huh? He has been moved to a new rehab facility. I did see this news article you posted here. My wife actually was talking to me about it. She's been following him quite a bit. She seems to have really become emotionally invested in this guy, just because of the tragic nature of what happened to him.
Yeah, well, and a lot of Giants fans, I think, really. I mean, I went to one of the games that a ton of Brian Stowe's friends and family and coworkers were at, you know, holding paramedic boots with for Stowe on them, just mm-hmm. stuck to the side. And everybody was trying to get some kind of, you know, just donations together for Stowe's medical care and to support his family. And, you know, I definitely gave it that game. And I think a lot of Giants fans really flocked to that cause. And it's not just about the Dodgers, and it's not just about, you know, the story or the media coverage. So much of it is about, like, what would I do in that situation? And I think it's you know, I think that some of the things that have happened with the Dodgers and responses to that have been, you know, maybe emblematic of one way that we as fans act. But I think that everything that's been revolving around how we've reacted to the Brian Stowe incident has been incredibly classy, and something that really shows a lot of what we see ourselves as Giants fans being about. So, I mean, it's been really nice to hear a lot of the details of the story, and people have been following it a lot. And so it's really good to hear that he is moving to a new rehab facility. He doesn't require constant medical attention anymore. He was rehabbing in Santa Clara for a while, but now that his needs aren't quite the same, he's going to be doing some more rehab now in an apartment with a couple of others who are also having a lot of difficulty with motor functions. And it's just, there are some things that are such a shame, though. You know, there was a note in that article, which we'll go ahead and post on the TortureCast site after this, but he doesn't remember a birthday party that was thrown for him by family and friends in early February. He's still got some issues with short-term memory. And
yeah,
it's just, that's such a shame.
Yeah, I've known some people that have had traumatic brain injuries, and everybody responds differently. Obviously, every injury is unique. Every recovery is unique. But you know, there are some pretty amazing stories where people look like they're going to be brain damaged the rest of their lives and have these lingering symptoms a year or two later. But I've seen it happen where 3, 4, 5 years later, with the appropriate medical care and rehabilitation, they come back to being pretty close to normal. I'm not saying that's where he's headed. Not at all. Obviously, I have no idea. But I'm just hoping that there is that string of hope that in a couple of years with the proper rehabilitation, he's gonna be a lot more functional than he is today.
Yeah, so. And definitely hoping he makes his way back a lot. You know, you've seen some people where you see them right at the beginning of their rehab stint, and there's that pause of thinking like, what? How is he ever gonna? You know, I had a friend who just a coworker of mine was working on some artwork and really kept himself in the same position for too long, really tightened up his back to the point that it spasmed and it nearly snapped. He like slipped a disc. When he came back to work, he was, you know, needed a walker to get around for a little while. And we really, at first, I think a lot of us were a lot more worried than we necessarily needed to be. I mean, the guy's very strong, very determined. And at this point, you know, everything is pretty much normal, other than he's got a much more heightened sense of, you know, how he needs to take care of himself ergonomically and take care of his body. But, you know, he's really, when we first saw him, we were all kind of shaken a little bit, and it's been surprising the way that he's been able to bounce back. I'm hoping for the same for Brian Stowe. I really am hoping that he's able to spring back from this with some time and some care and, you know, the right medical work. And I mean, hopefully we'll see him at a game sometime soon. You know, that's the kind of thing that I think would give the whole Giants community a boost, is not only seeing him up and moving and walking and communicating and being with the family, but you know, making it back to the rest of us in a sense. And kind of,
but he can't sue. He's being asked not to sue until
until the Dodgers are out of bankruptcy.
Yeah, until they're out of bankruptcy. It's Brian, like, okay, you gotta wait till we sell this and get out of bankruptcy, and then you could sue us, and then only the insurance company. So, you know, I'm just saying,
for what it's worth, Stowe's lawyers have already rejected that.
Oh, they have. Okay, I haven't read that. I'd
heard they already rejected that. I haven't gotten to see too many of the details yet, though. I'll have to see if there's an article I can find on that one. But, for further news, you know, check out the We Barely Talk Giants on this Torturecast. So let's talk a couple of Giants. You know, we always mention birthdays on this show. So I'm gonna toss a couple of them in there before we start talking the last few games, the first few of spring training. So we've got a couple of birthdays this last week. We got Moose McCormick on the 28th, and that's not necessarily a name I expect a lot of people to know, but I thought it was really neat because Moose McCormick actually played for the Giants from 1904 to 1913. That's 9 years, primarily in left field with a little bit of moving to center, right, and first base. So you can see that the predominant idea of outfielder eventually ends up at first base after spending most of his time in left field. Predominant pretty much through the entire century. But yeah, Moose McCormick. I also thought that this was really referring back to our discussion with Aaron about good baseball names. I don't know how well it would work to call a guy Moose now, but the name Moose McCormick, I imagine this really, really just brawny,
mm-hmm.
you know, this like massive Scottish dude. I guess. Just Moose McCormick.
Yeah, I was thinking like Moose McGillicuddy, you know, something right. Something like that. Big, you know, forearms like tree trunks kind of guy. Yeah.
Right. I didn't look up how many home runs he'd hit, but with a name like Moose,
probably
he should have.
Probably zero, which most players hit in that era.
In that era, right. Well, I mean, you know, at least one home run during the dead ball era would qualify him to be that era's Barry Bonds. So, yeah, I mean.
Pretty much.
We've also got on the 1st, we've actually got Mark Gardner, who definitely spent quite a bit of time with the Giants after his Giants career as well. It's nice to see that name come up. And we've also got a really auspicious birthday. The 4th of March.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big deal not only for... It's a combination. We've got our big Giants names, and we've got our big modern Giants names. But if the history of this particular birthday is any sign, we're in a good spot. Because two of the birthdays on the 4th are legendary Hall of Famer Mel Ott, whose name still appears on the all-time Giants home run leaderboard out in center field.
Mm-hmm.
So Mel Ott, big deal, March 4th. Lefty O'Doul, Legendary lefty, Lefty O'Doul, if you will.
I like his bridge, yes.
I do like his bridge. I also like his pub. I got a corned beef sandwich there a while back. It was amazing. But yeah, Lefty O'Doul, really good story from the San Francisco Seals era as well. And then on March 4th as well, Sergio Romo. So happy birthday, Serge. If we had done our podcast when we normally do on the 4th, we that would have been a lot more exciting. But happy belated birthday, Serge. Sergio Romo is one of those guys that I think he's going to be one of those relievers that people in San Francisco remember for a long time. And you don't usually say that about relief pitchers that aren't closers. You know, you would have said it about like Goose or about, Eck or about Rob Nen, but you wouldn't normally say something like that about, like, Brad Hennessy or, Waldis Joaquin. You know, you don't go, oh, yeah, man, you know, other than, like, saying the one, like, I remember back during the World Series in that one game when, but you don't usually go, boy, I sure remember that one relief pitcher in his 5 years with the Giants. You know, it's not something you normally hear. And I think Romo has a really good bid to, he's such a fan favorite. He's really relatable. He's got so much energy. People who watched the game today got to see Romo come in for an interview for a little bit. And once he warmed up to talking on the camera, I was having way too much fun. I was actually really upset that they took him out of the before the inning was over because it was such a long inning. Because Serge has had so many good things to say about Tyler Graham, about the rest of the team, about other pitchers, Ryan Wilson. And I think Romo is a guy who's going to have a lot of success in San Francisco on his personality alone. Mm-hmm. And it's only helped by the fact that he is an incredible pitcher who's only getting better as he gets older.
Yeah, he was really warming up there at the end. In fact, I thought the same thing. They're like, well, thanks for your time. I'm like, no, I want more of Sergio Romo. But
it's a spring training game. I don't need you to give me more play-by-play, especially not now.
I don't care about number 89 on the field, you know? I mean, it's okay. I was really interested in hearing about, I knew he had developed a change in the offseason, but he was using it a little bit tonight, and he says he really likes that, and he's definitely putting it in his arsenal for this season. So I'm really anxious to see if that extra weapon or two is going to – I mean, after last year, I don't know how much better he could do. I mean, yeah, God, a 1.5 ERA, retiring 30-something batters in a row. I mean
– well, and almost nobody has struck out the side so far in spring training. Romo is one of the only guys to do that on the Giants staff. And when you look at the way that he's using the changeup, you heard Kipe talking about it, the fact that he gets a lot of swing and misses on his slider to righties – but lefties don't get the mm-hmm. same look because the pitch bores in on them, so they either can get out of the way in time or they can make contact and barrel it up. And so it's a really good slider, but it's devastating against righties. It's just extremely good against lefties. And that changeup, it drops straight down. It's not switching to left or right when he was using it. Like, you saw it in there. It would just drop right off the table when it was getting close to the plate. And it's got a little bit of a bend on it. It doesn't have the same drop that, like, Timmy's changeup does, which is almost more of a two-seam fastball. But Serge's changeup, it's vertical. So it's not going to matter what side of the plate you're on. It's just going to drop. And so you have to have that awareness that I'm not going to be able to barrel things up because I won't know whether they're coming flat or in towards me. They also could drop straight down. And so I think that's going to help him a lot.
Yeah, you heard him. He basically said he wants to be used in more situations. He right. wants to give Boach, he put it in very good politically correct terms. He was saying he wants Boach to think less about how to use him, i.e. I want him to have no excuse to not use me against lefties. Right. I mean, that's basically what he was saying, because he wants to be in the game.
Right.
And, you know, and not just be a righty specialist.
Right, and I think that he knows that he and Javi kind of got that. I mean, Javi shook the reputation a little bit towards the end of the season. Romo, not as much. But I think he wants to shake that reputation that he and Javi developed where they were one-side specialists. And so you'd have the Romo-Javier Lopez 1-2 punch of righty-righty-lefty. And, yeah, I think he wants to shake that. I think that's admirable because it really adds to his resume. And, I mean, the changeup looks good. There's no reason for him not to add it in there with the rest of his pitches. And by doing so, he immediately becomes, he develops a lot more of a look, and it gives him more of an opportunity to stay in the game. And I'm never going to say no to more Romo on the mound, frankly. So I'm okay with this.
He's going to start now.
Right. Barry Zito, all right. Watch out. Watch your tail. Sergio Romo is coming, and he's really big while he does it.
All right, we had baseball this week.
We totally didn't we? Had baseball this week. I'm almost not used to it. I was standing at the bus stop listening to tonight's game, and I was just I was struck by the fact I'm standing at a bus stop listening to a baseball game. How long has it been since I've done that?
Mm-hmm.
It's a strange feeling, but a really nice one. We started off with a game on the 3rd versus Arizona at Scottsdale Stadium. That ended up being a loss 9-6, although it started out a lot closer, but that seems to be a theme for us a little bit this season so far, so that's a bit of an issue. Lincecum did start that game, though. We got 2 innings out of him, 4 hits and an earned run, but we did get 2 strikeouts. He definitely warmed up towards the second inning, really started looking a lot better. But then we had Eric Sierkamp come in behind him, and it was just, you know, it was 1 1/3, 3 hits, 3 earned runs, 1 walk, and in a home run. Sierkamp really doesn't quite look like he's settled in yet, but on the other hand, that's one game, and he hasn't had another outing since then. So I don't want to pass much judgment,
no.
But you know, it's one of those things where you see the guy start off, and he starts off on one foot, and you're open to letting him change his own trajectory by pitching better as time goes on. But Sierkamp, I think, you've now see Sierkamp, who is not on that, you know, Vogelsong, Lincecum, Bumgarner track of guaranteed success. Sierkamp is fighting for a spot, and I think this doesn't bode well, but it's one day.
Yeah, it's one day, and I don't think...
Small sample size.
Very small sample size.
I love overreacting. It's so much fun.
It's okay. That guy hit a home run. He went 2 for 2. He's going to bat 1,000 this spring and make the team. Yeah, it's funny, actually, listening to KNBR and how many fans are calling in and saying that Sierkamp should replace Zito as the 5th starter. People are just jumping to conclusions so quickly. I know Zito has not been good. He had a 5-something ERA last year. But this guy barely...
Shit this spring.
Well, that's true, but, you know, their argument was just Sierkamp's better than Zito because everybody's better than Zito. But, I mean, look, Sierkamp comes in, gives up 3 earned runs in an inning, and yeah, small sample size, but I think people need to chill out a little bit. Let's see how this kid does. I don't think he's going to start the season on the team, although we'll get to it later. There is the Runzler injury, which could bring up a possibility for him to start the year with the club.
We'll be looking for a good lefty, that's for certain.
Exactly.
But Sierkamp is just, he's really young. I mean, he finished the season last year in double A before he came up for his cup of coffee with the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
And he hasn't even played at Fresno. And the Giants, I think, on the one hand, I think Sierkamp was big league ready last year, and we really saw that. On the other hand, I definitely feel like if there's, you know, when you look at the entire staff as they are now, I think Sierkamp is the guy who will benefit the most from some time at Fresno, even more so than guys who have been at Fresno, who we've really had some time to see, who maybe end up there because there isn't enough space on the roster, like Shane Lux is probably going to end up there. Sierkamp, on the other hand, I think benefits a lot from that because he hasn't seen California League pitching, or not California League, excuse me. He hasn't seen Pacific Coast League pitching and hitting. And the league itself tends to be, like, it's much closer to the bigs, even though it's still not the same by a long shot. It's mm-hmm. very different from trying to play on the East Coast in Double A. I think that he's going to benefit more from being in Fresno than any of the other pitchers currently on the roster, just about.
Yeah, the hitting's much better there.
Well, that's because everybody who's there is either rehabbing from the major leagues, sent down from the major leagues, about to go to the major leagues. You know, Double A is much more of a developmental area, whereas Triple A, it mixes between developmental and holding pattern. You get a lot of guys who get blocked who end up in Triple A. So, I mean, you'll have guys who can't crack the big league club, like Nate Schierholz was in Triple A for a long time playing in Fresno. And it's that kind of thing. You're going to see guys who are good and who are definitely major league ready who just can't break in yet. And I think that it'll be good for him to face some of those guys, even though not all of the hitters are going to be at the level that he'll see in the big leagues. Some of them are. And that's, I think, going to be good for him because he needs to be able to get more time in against better hitting, essentially. We did also have a couple of appearances from in that first game. We also saw Guillermo Moda, who also allowed 3 hits and 3 earned runs, so he and Sierkamp, not a great day going there. I hear the angry breathing on that side. I can't blame you. We've also got Steve Edlison had a little appearance, 1 inning pitched. No strikeouts, but no nothing else either, and that's certainly a good sign. I definitely liked Edlison when he came up last year. I'm hoping he gets a little time. I don't think he makes a big club this year, but on the other hand, you know, maybe. There's a lot of guys who are maybes for making the big club on this roster.
Mm-hmm.
We also had an interesting showing from Josh Colemanter. Two innings pitched, three hits, three earned runs. Colemanter has a really funky delivery where he kind of almost like he pitches overhand like he's trying to lob the ball at you, throws guys off, makes the ball come from a very different angle, and he can still control it fairly well. It's definitely why Colemanter did so well last year for the Diamondbacks. But Colemanter has never struck me as a guy who won't potentially revert to form at any given moment. So I'm curious to see as we face him, as we continue to face Colemanter during the offseason, Excuse me.
Keep those Coronas going there, buddy.
Thanks. Family podcast. Not really. I am curious to see how Colemanter does. I do want to point out, though, that there were two outings that I was pretty impressed with. Hector Correa only came on for 2/3 of an inning there, one hit, but one strikeout. Not a lot of strikeouts in this part of spring training. It's very early still. And for Arizona, Wade Miley went 2 innings against us in a game where we did knock in 6 runs. We certainly had plenty of time to push runs across the plate. We weren't having a poor hitting day, and Wade Miley still got 2 strikeouts in 2 innings. He debuted. I'm reading phonetically now. He debuted with 8 games in 2011 with the D-backs. He actually went 40 innings pitched with a 4.5 ERA and 1.65 WHIP. So Wade Miley actually could be a reliever sleeper for the team next year, folks. It's possible we might even see him with the big club depending on how the rest of their relief does.
Yeah, well, Arizona's going to be tough this year. I mean, not just because they're defending champs, but they made their team better this year, so it's going to be tough. Brandon Belt, he started off hot, maybe a little bit from the Dominican League, a little leftover rub off from there, but yeah, he went yard, 3 for 4, 2 runs.
Yeah, he's definitely getting very aggressive, nearly went yard today too. I mean, I really like what I'm seeing from Brandon Belt so far. He's definitely being more aggressive. He's said as much. Everyone pretty much says as much. He's going after pitches more often. I'm hoping that this doesn't mean that we see him walking less. During spring training, I don't mind that so much while he's still trying out the aggressive approach in game situations. But at the same time, when we get into the regular season, one of the things I like most about Brandon Belt was his eye, and I'm really hoping we don't lose that.
Yeah, I think there needs to be a happy medium. I mean, he can't go all panda on this, I don't think, and just hack at everything. But
I don't think that's his game. That's definitely Panda's game because that's how Panda's brain works. But I feel like Belt is more of a thinker, and I feel like there's a way to use that to your advantage after, you know, it's that idea that you overshoot and you get too aggressive first, and then you can learn to dial it back, mm-hmm. as opposed to not being aggressive enough, and then where does it come from when you need it?
That's right. So Melky Cabrera, he knocked in Pagan, didn't he, in that first game? I was actually listening at that point. That was actually kind of nice.
Yeah,
to see Pagan single, steal second, and get knocked in with a double. So I'm hoping that there's going to be a lot of that this year, assuming that Freddy Sanchez isn't going to be available too much to hit in that second hole. I'm a little concerned about that.
Yeah, and they've talked about moving Freddy's bat south in the lineup a little bit, having him bat maybe fifth or sixth, because he's got a good enough bat to knock in some runs. I like Freddie in a two-hole if he's doing well enough to play there, but Cabrera's speed does mm-hmm. make him kind of hard to ignore. So I think it's something that they're going to play with all through spring training, especially once Freddie's feeling well enough to start playing again, which hopefully will be before spring training is out. But a 1-2 punch of Pagan and Cabrera is not the worst thing that we could put out there. I think that it looks pretty darn good so far. It's not nothing gorgeous, but Pagan has been pretty decent at getting on base. Blanco has been real good at getting on base, surprisingly. And Cabrera has been doing definitely not the same level of speed as them, but he brings a lot of athleticism to our game. So I would not at all complain seeing a Pagan-Cabrera 1-2 punch.
All right, so then we had the exciting tie at Milwaukee, and this was their split squad action. They had
spring training games. Yeah, 1-1 in the ninth. You want to go home? Yeah, I'm getting
angry. Let's go home.
Let's get out of here.
We have the other team over there anyway, so we got enough at bats. So yeah, they won at Arizona 11-1, and they tied Milwaukee 1-1. Bumgarner started the tie game and went almost three innings, gave up one earned run. Had four Ks though, so by all accounts, it was a pretty solid start. Just working on some mechanics, but nothing too alarming either way there.
Yeah, looked pretty nice from what I heard. Definitely also heard Bumgarner is looking closer to season form than some of the other guys. And everybody works on their own schedule during spring training. I'm not going to look at somebody's spring training numbers and say, wow, he did horrible in spring training. I don't feel good about that at all. I'd rather look at how does he look by the last few games when we're getting into season form. But the first few games, guys are tweaking things. They're trying things out. They're getting used to pitching long periods again, you know, in game situations where the breaks between are different than when you're doing bullpen sessions. And I think Bumgarner is sounding close to season form now, but I think that also bodes well just because he's, you know, we had a lot of talk about how he's a young guy. His innings limit changed a lot because he started in high school and came directly into the majors, and suddenly he's pitching every 5 days and racking up the innings. And I think that that actually bodes well, that it's we're going to have some more longevity out of him. He's got a lot more energy. And he's got some more time to kind of build himself up as we go on. We also had an appearance from Shane Lux, too. So, of course, I'm excited about that.
And I see that Casilla pitched as well. Did he get an at-bat?
He should have, but I imagine that they could have they probably could have had Ron Wotus carry a potted plant out and set it in the corner of the batter's box, and it would have been about the same.
Sorry, I had a big discussion over Facebook today with some friends about the designated hitter, and just some of these guys were just hating on National League ball, saying that the designated hitter is where it's at. Pitchers, they are useless. They don't even craft that part of their game. You know, it's not even entertainment. Everybody talks about strategy and double switches and all that bull crap. I don't want to see some weak ass hitter. Oop, we have a clean podcast, right? A weak derriere hitter up there. And I said, oh yeah, you want to see entertainment? Here's entertainment. And I linked that YouTube video of Casillas at bat last year. So that was the end of my argument right there.
Brilliant. Or else the one where, Dan Runsoy swings and then breaks himself. Actually, I don't really like that one, only because Runsoy was pretty genuinely hurt, as I recall. Or was that Runsoy? It was somebody that swung and just hurt himself on the swing. Casilla, though, he looked like he really would have rather just run away screaming. Like, as if, you know, the horde of bees that actually attacked the Arizona game, I always felt like Santiago Casilla, like, acted like there was a horde of bees around home plate, and if he actually got anywhere near it, there was going to be a problem. And then he walked, and it was amazing.
It was a thing of beauty. Anyway.
We'll have to relink that one again just for fun.
So we had Lopez pitch an inning, and then the guy I'm kind of excited about is Hembree. He's really developing, and in fact, this spring they've already had a story about how he hit 99 on the gun, and the guys came over and said, "You just hit 99," and he's like, "Cool." You know, he's not even used to throwing that hard, but I think.
Well, and he looked like he wasn't even airing it out all the way. It sounds like, you know, he hadn't even gone 100%. He's like, "What, 99? Oh, that's pretty awesome."
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. So it sounds like his body's really kind of maturing and catching up to what his mechanics allow him to do. And I know it's too early to say anything now. You always see these studs that are throwing, you know, 99, 100 somewhere in the minor leagues, and they end up never making a name for themselves in the major leagues because major league hitters can hit 99 mile an hour fastballs. It's what else can you do? So, but, you know, with
Hembree's definitely looking good. I mean, two strikeouts in one inning. Versus Milwaukee, who are not a bad team. I mean, even if it was some of their later in the game against some of their other string guys, I mean, that's, you know, Hembree's looking pretty good at this point in the spring. And I think that some time with Rags and the other coaches, I think, is going to do him really good. So I'm really curious to see how long Hembree stays with the club, how long it is until they cut him. That's why one of the reasons I love watching these early games before they start cutting guys is you see everybody. But Hembree is one of those guys, though. Hembree, I don't get the feeling that he's going to get cut early. I think Hembree is going to stick around for a while, much like I think the same of a couple of the other guys like Tommy Joseph or Andrew Susak. I think are going to stick around with the club for a while.
So what else stuck out to you for the game at Milwaukee and then the win at Arizona?
I mean, the game at Milwaukee kind of hurt. Neither team did particularly well. Milwaukee only had 4 hits the entire game, and 2 of those came from Jonathan LaCroix, the catcher. LaCroix is not exactly known for his wild batting prowess. So, I mean, I can't really say that I'm super impressed with them. Ryan Braun went 0 for 2 with 2 Ks. So, just more proof that whether or not you're dope, your ability to hit, you know.
No, it does not.
No, it's like, wow, all this strength means I can really hit the ball now. It's like, not if you can't see it. So, that said, you know, all commentary aside, my big high point of that game was Brandon Crawford going 2 for 3 with an RBI. I mean, everybody was
right. Yeah, not much offense there. What can you say? They scored 1 run, so.
Yeah, but Brandon Crawford going 2 for 3 is kind of a big deal. 2 for 3 with an RBI is also kind of a big deal. Crawford really has been looking more comfortable at the plate. He started finally to look a little bit more comfortable at the end of last year. It's much improved now, so.
All right, so the win at Arizona, we actually had offense.
We had 11 runs worth of offense.
That's right. Pill was 3 for 5 with 2 ribbies. Terrio was 2 for 3 with a couple of runs. Fontenot, the other side of the infield, was 3 for 4. Hector Sanchez was a perfect 3 for 3 with 3 ribbies.
Yeah, really. Yeah. Nice seeing Terrio and Fontenot play on either side of the infield. Curious to see if we'll see that during the regular season, but
it's going to be for August infield. I'm telling you.
Obviously, the two of them look pretty good so far playing next to each other, and I'm sure that the coaching staff paid a little attention to that. I'm actually going to jump over to something here that I mentioned because we're getting a little short on time. I did actually put together a little catcher watch for us that I probably will not post up at this point in the season, but I may do that a little bit later, just comparing some of the different options we have at catcher and first base. But as far as the catcher watch goes, so far we've got Chris Stewart has had a couple of 0 for 2 games with a ground into a double play on the third. He did have a 1 for 2 with a double yesterday. Hector Sanchez, on the other hand, 1 for 2 on the third, 3 for 3 on the fourth. Sanchez is definitely looking very good as a hitter. Defensively, probably not as strong as Stewart, or really more of a hitting catcher than a catching hitter, or more of a catching hitter rather than a hitting catcher. But I'm curious to see how that changes as he has a little more time in AAA. Jackson Williams, 0 for 2. I'm hoping Williams turns it around. He's such a great defender as a catcher from everything that I've ever heard. Andrew Susak has not had an at-bat yet. He's 0 for 0, but he did throw out Eric Ferris during the game on the 4th, so nice to see him with some snap in the arm. Tommy Joseph is so far has had 2 games, or 3 games, I guess, 0 for 3, 0 for 1, and today 0 for 1. So Joseph's got a big offer so far. He also hasn't had a lot of chances to start. Those may not come during this camp. I think that with some more time, though, you know, once he has some more time to get comfortable, which obviously he has not gotten yet, I'm feeling pretty good about him. And of course, Whiteside so far has only gotten into 1 game, and he went 1 for 3 with the strikeout. So offensively, Sanchez is ahead of just about everybody else. Defensively, though, I think that it's going to be a muddle. We're really going to need a few more days to figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. And then at first base, we have of course the Huff Belt Pill trio. I think we all know that Pill might be on the bench at some point this season if he doesn't make camp out of spring training.
Agreed.
As the right-handed specialist off the bench or the occasional off day.
And I think it's clear that the Pill's not being viewed the same way Belt is as a prospect. Pill's definitely a backup guy, and that's fine. Pill is still an excellent hitter, and I feel like you don't waste that if you have it. But at the same time, he's not. I don't see him as a starting level talent.
No, not at all. But Belt obviously has started out pretty hot. 3 for 4 the first game, 1 for 4 the second game. And what did he do? Oh, 0 for 3 tonight. But, you know, his eyes looking good. His aggressiveness is looking good.
Hit a real loud out today that got caught by Logan Schaefer in the outfield. So good for Schaefer. That was a pretty impressive catch there. But, yep, 0 for 3 today. He still is looking very comfortable at the plate, though, this time so far this season. And that's been really encouraging.
Yeah, and then Huff is looking pretty decent, too. He whacked one out of the yard today. Yeah, I believe it was in the 4th inning or so to give the Giants a 1-0 lead. So that was a nice shot. But he was 0 for 2. He had a home run today, 2 for 3 yesterday. So he's looking okay so far, but hopefully the Pilates is bringing them back to where he was in 2010.
Well, in fairness, Huff did have a good spring in 2011 as well. But
yeah, that's true.
That said, you know, I think at the moment, if it carries on like this, I think Huff gets the nod because of his, you know, the experience, the contract, and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Belt's going to need a better showing to really make the club right now. But I think it's going to depend also on the outfield. We've seen Belt made a nice sliding catch in the sort of on a tweener between left and center today. So I think that there's a chance that Belt potentially makes the club if the outfield or first base leaves a hole open for him to take it, because they're going to want his bat in the lineup if they can get it there and give him a chance like they did last year. I just really hope they don't jerk him around again.
All right, so let's talk injuries, I guess. Dan Rensler, we mentioned earlier, he pulled his lat throwing a bullpen session, and at first they kind of said, he's going to be day-to-day, he's going to go see a doctor about it. Now the report is he's going to be out at least a month, so... I'm really, really sad I didn't get his autograph at FanFest because I really, really wanted it. But unfortunately, maybe that's where his injury developed, by the way. Signing too many, you know, for those poor kids with panda hats going, who's this guy? Sorry, I kid. I'm so mean.
I mean, I like Danny Rensler. He had a real nice showing when he first came up. I think everybody was very impressed by his stuff and his ability. He had a lot of really good control, and that kind of tapered off a bit as he continued on with a couple more seasons. So Rensler is definitely good enough to be in this bullpen. He definitely has a great left arm, and I'm really hoping that when he gets it back together that we give him some time in rehab and then can bring him up, but that's really gonna depend on him. We've also got Posey still testing the ankle. He really hasn't done a lot of base running yet. He said he was going to start doing some slides either today or tomorrow, I believe, and just testing out some more base running type abilities. I think they're really worried because you remember a year or two ago, Emmanuel Burris had to have surgery on his foot. There was a plate put in there, and then he actually re-injured it running the bases real hard. And I think they're trying to be real careful of having that happen to Posey, you know, as they still test that leg and get it strengthened up again.
Yeah, you get, you know, going around those bases, you got to plant that foot, and a lot of centripetal force, centripetal force is being applied to the ankle, and they don't want that thing to blow out, and running is not his number one priority at this point. They want him to be catching and hitting. So, running is secondary at this point. So,
although there is a possibility of him DHing at some point soon, and unless they pull a spring training, we don't have to follow the rules maneuver and have someone
for
him. I don't think that. I think that we don't see him as DH unless they feel comfortable with him running the bases, especially with this new athletic emphasis that we're seeing from the Giants.
Yes.
Some quick hits on a couple of the others. Wilson threw 20 pitches to some live batters. Burris actually said he saw a slider, and those are a lot harder on the arm, so Wilson seems to be in a pretty good shape. Freddie Sanchez is taking ground balls. He's been thrown to first base. Andrew Baggerly said he hasn't seen him make any real hard or complicated or difficult throws yet, so they're not overly testing his rotator cuff yet, but they're giving it some time. Vogelsong is going to throw off the mound on Wednesday or Thursday, so he's just about back. They're just giving his back some time to heal up. And Francisco Peguero, who was a big deal outfield prospect for a little while and then sort of gradually started slipping off the table there, he has undergone surgery for an issue and may not be back for a bit. Hopefully he gets enough time for us to really see how he's doing, but they are, I believe, trying to get getting a second opinion. Or actually, maybe he's already undergone surgery. That's one that I'll have to look into. Any thoughts on any of these?
No, I just, you know, Vogie, I just hope that he's going to have a repeat from last year. We've seen it happen too many times in this league where you see a resurgent, maybe not to the extent of Vogelsong. He really was kind of a once-in-a-decade kind of resurgence. But you do see these minor resurgences by other players just to fall flat on their face again. And I'm just hoping that an injury like this isn't going to keep coming up and, you know, hindering his progress or his repeat. In fact, I was listening to a couple of fantasy sports shows, and a lot of analyses have him at about a 4.0 to a 3.8 ERA this year. Everybody seems to be thinking that he is going to have kind of a more of a reality check back to the curve of the norm, and that his ERA is going to bump up by a full run. I'm hoping that's not true. I'm hoping he keeps it in the low threes this year, but I admit it's going to be hard to keep a 2.74 ERA that he had last year.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know whether he gets close to that again this year, but I have to say, I'm still personally of the mind, you give him time to heal before you have him air it out,
yeah,
because a solid, healed, fully healthy Vogel song is going to be much more valuable than a blow them out early Vogel song where you end up needing to pull up guys like Lux and Surkamp. Yep. I definitely feel like if we make sure that he's healthy, we put ourselves in a much better position for him to have a good success and for us to have success. All right, so besides us heaping praise on Vogel song, let's also heap praise on some other guys. Have you got a favorite guy this week?
Yeah, Sergio Romo really came down to the interview tonight.
Absolutely.
He was just cracking me up. I just like the fact that he kind of relates to the fans. He's very loose. He doesn't just give you the company line or the PC term. He's making faces at the camera. He's laughing at Crook and Kipe. He just seems like he really loves this game. He's truly a kid that is playing this game for the love of it. He's trying to develop pitches so Boach has an excuse or reason to keep him, you know, in games longer, and that he could face lefties and contribute more to the team. He's competitive. He's funny. He's just not your prototypical Major League Baseball player or elite athlete in terms of personality. So he's my new favorite guy.
Yeah, I definitely like Romo. I've always liked his personality. He just looks like he's the happiest kid in the candy shop every time he goes onto the mound. And he gets so fired up out there. You gotta like him. And I think San Francisco fans have really taken to that. I know I have, and that interview really did it for me as well. Because we saw a couple other interviews. You know, Affelt was a lot of fun. Boach and Kane were up there. But Romo's was just really memorable because, especially as soon as they mentioned Tyler Graham, and it's like he just lit up and just started talking about, hey, Spider Monkey! And that was fun for me. For me personally, though, I got to go with Gregor Blanco is my new favorite guy. This guy has not really come out of nowhere, per se, but, I mean, dude's got wheels. He's fast enough. He could have come out of nowhere. We just wouldn't have seen him coming. But he's got that thing that Darren Ford had, but he's really showing off with the bat, too. And not just against the later game, like the later inning pitchers, some of whom tend to be more of the younger prospects, but some of these starting guys. He's having really good games against some of these guys that are being brought up and starting. Especially today, he started the game, and he had a pretty good game, too. So, I mean, I'm pretty impressed with Blanco so far. I think that there is at least an outside shot for him to take the fifth outfielder spot. I think that if he keeps running like this, if he fields well, and if he keeps hitting at least, you know, I'd say even mostly like this, I'd say it's really likely we see him take that fifth spot that was given to Darren Ford last year.
All right, we should hate this guy. I know I already talked about it before, and I know he gets a bad rap. I think he's actually done quite a bit of good for baseball, but right now I don't like Bud Selig for the expansion of the playoffs.
He's so predictable.
I know. I start the show with it and I end the show with it. But hey, it's what I feel right now. But I'll get over it, especially, of course, if the Giants back into the playoffs with the fifth wild card. But yeah, I'm not a fan of this. I think it's being forced in. I think they need to think about this a little bit more, maybe implement a three-game system, at least wait till next year when things are a little bit more balanced. But I'll get over it.
I don't know. I feel like I have so many other good reasons to dislike Bud Selig, but I'm not going to this right now.
Yeah.
I actually, for as far as hating this guy, I'm going to go with the group. I actually am going to say that I'm going to hate on the Dodgers, but this time I'm going to hate on their lawyers. On the one hand, you know, I guess you could say that the incident that happened at Dodger Stadium did happen outside. It happened in the parking lot. You know, there are some questions about who the blame should be directed at, but I do feel like the Dodger lawyers are working for a team that just signed Matt Kemp to a large contract and that, according to rumors, may have been heavy in the running for Prince Fielder. I can't really get behind this idea of, can you just hold up a second until we're out of bankruptcy while we're committing this much money into the future on these players? You know, they're not even clear enough on getting out of their situation yet that I feel like they have the luxury of doing that. They do it. I mean, on the one hand, they have no choice. You got to keep Matt Kemp. You can't not keep Matt Kemp. But it seems really awkward from an outsider's perspective to say, well, you're going to drop $160 million in 8 years on somebody when you're also trying to tell someone else, please stop suing us until we have enough money for you to sue our insurance company.
Yeah, you know, I know your life was irrevocably changed because of events that happened, probably due to the lack of Dodger security. And I know that you have mounting medical bills in the millions of dollars and you need all this assistance. But you know what? We need to pay our you know, high price athletes right now. So why don't you go ahead and wait?
Hey, until your life is irrevocably changed. It's still going to be that changed way, you know, a couple of weeks from now when we're in a better spot. I mean, makes me a little.
Yeah, when I read that, it kind of made me sick too, but.
A little bit. I mean, and some of it is being a Giants fan and seeing how it's been painted. So I don't know what exactly is going on with all that. I certainly don't know anything about bankruptcy court other than the fact that I don't have any money, but that really isn't the same thing.
There's different chapters of it. That's all I know.
It's true. And so, I mean, on the one hand, I'm sure I'm willing to kind of, you know, give him the benefit of the doubt, but not in this situation, just because it's, you know, we as fans have so much emotionally invested in it that I can't just be like, yeah, sure, at least you're trying to compromise. I'm like, no, you jerks. Stop it.
You're take a loner. All right, so why are we going to win it all?
All right, so we're recording this podcast kind of late, so I have the feeling both of us are going to go out on a limb today, but I'm going to start with this. I was watching a dance concert the other day. No, really, I'm honestly starting with that. I was watching a dance concert the other day at San Francisco State University. The program there has been very strong, and one of the things that's very strong about them is that they actually require all of their dance majors to take a Pilates class, which got me, of course, thinking about our good gentleman, Aubrey Huff, because Pilates is something that he's expressed as being part of his off-season workouts that he's bringing back. And, you know, I've seen what Pilates has done for a lot of dancers. You know, the dancers that have really strengthened their core appear to be able to do a lot of things that human bodies simply can't do, you know, stand on one foot for 7 minutes at a time or leap several extra feet into the air. And so I feel like what's going to happen is Huff is actually going to be so inspired that when he retires, he's actually going to open his own, he's going to get certified in Pilates, and he's actually going to open his own baseball-related Pilates training studio. And obviously, when he does this, he's going to, you know, Huff is a really likable guy. He's been in a couple of different organizations. He's, you know, if you're looking for social networking, all you need to do is look over at Pat Burrell, who will find you all the people you need anywhere. And I mean, I think that he'll get a lot of the Giants to come in, and they'll work with him on that. And this new Pilates-infused team of Giants is going to be able to leap, you know, 10 feet in the air and rob home runs that are flying over the arcade. And, you know, they're going to be able to, you know, stare at the ball until it flies over the fence. I mean, this is a team that's going to become, quite simply, superhuman at its core. Yeah, I just made that pun. I'm really sorry about it. But I have to say that even though it may not be
strong
this year,
core,
it may not be this year, because I think Huff still has a couple years left in him. But at some point soon, I think this is why we are going to win it all.
All right. That is odd and peculiar, and I probably know more than mine. Back in 1993, I remember I was a cashier at the UC Santa Cruz dining hall, sitting there taking students' cards, swiping them through. And I pulled out the paper and saw that the big news in the headline is that we had discovered, well, Pluto was still a planet then. Remember that, okay? It's no longer a planet. But at the time, we discovered the first planet outside of our solar system. And everybody was just absolutely amazed by this. Oh my gosh, we've known about these planets for so long and blah, 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 blah. I just remember that indelible moment marked in my mind, because I've always been kind of a pseudo fan of astronomy and archaeology and paleontology and kind of those other things.
Right there with you.
And so it's quite amazing to me that in the years since, we've obviously through inference with planetary shift and light shift and all that stuff like that, discovered not just hundreds, but this past week, data now indicates that they have discovered yet another 1,000 extrasolar planets, bringing the total number discovered to about 2,000. And this number is just going to inflate over time. So my point is, not that the stars or planets have aligned, nothing cheesy like that.
Aww.
But I never thought in my lifetime I'd learn that humans, we've discovered 2,000, and it'll be more than that, 2,000 planets, let alone the Giants winning the World Series. So it seems not that much more of a stretch that the Giants could win two World Series if we could discover 2,000 planets. So.
And when they find another 2,000 planets, the Giants will win another one, and it's going
to
be exponential.
They'll go on a run like the Yankees or something.
We have to win. It's in the name of science.
Damn it. For every 1,000 planets they discover, that is one World Series title for the Giants. So say we're up to 2,000, so that's two titles.
We need it. Science is only going to start finding those faster.
Yeah, well, that's a problem, right? Because if they start discovering 5,000 a year, you can't really win five titles in a year. So they'll have to work on that.
We will find a way, and it will involve Pilates.
Awesome.
Oh, man. All right. I think that's a good sign that we really need to wind this up. So that's going to be it for us from the TortureCast for this week. I am Ben Lee here with Chad King. You can catch us on Twitter at TortureCast, or you can also catch us on Facebook, or you can also catch us on iTunes, or you can also catch us on mail at mail@torturecast.com. We're working out some new things as well. We're trying to write more posts. Check us on the web at torturecast.com. Subscribe to us. Follow us. Fan us. Like us.
Do
Pilates with us. We hope you already like us. We hope you already do Pilates with us. Catch us on Twitter. I am at Fried Duck. You can also catch Chad at ChadK21. Or you can catch Willie at Willie Dills. But until next time, you have plenty of ways to get in touch with us, so you'd better chat with us. Let us know what you're thinking of spring training. And in the meantime, we'll keep watching Aubrey Huff, Brett Pill, and Brandon Belt go boom!
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.